Session number 10880.
Mr. Puril Toe.
We moved up over the Belgian border in a column of vehicles, heading in the general direction towards Brussels. It was a very hot day, that I do recall. And in the evening, we harboured on or around a golf course outside of Brussels, and it was the same golf course that Henry Cotton won the championships on. We were not bothered by any aircraft activity in our journey through Belgium, not enemy air activity. And indeed, it was more like a peacetime move, except we were made very welcome by the Belgians, and who seemed genuinely pleased to see us. When we stayed in the in and around the area of the golf course, and then dispersed forward from there, and our particular section of carriers were detached to a house, a large house, which I understand was the American consul's house, to take up a defensive position. And the battalion was along the main Brussels Waterloo Road in the woods of the vehicles, which was part of it was concrete road. We were told to remain at this house and until we was runner would be sent to tell us to rejoin the battalion or rejoin the platoon. And it was there that we saw the real first results of a war, in which there was a anti-tank gun crew of the British Army had apparently been hit by shells or mortar bombs and were lying around dead in a gun wreck. No one came to tell us to retire, as we had taken up position the evening before under cover of darkness. And we remained at this house, and at 11 o'clock, the corporal in charge of the section was getting a bit concerned that we hadn't heard anything from anyone, and the only thing we had heard was loads of shells going over, which we had assumed was from our side going to the German side, but which we later concluded, in light of our experience, that it was the German shells going from their side to our side. And round about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, one of the gun crews, or drivers rather, one of the drivers, a chap named Clancy, said he would take a bike from the house and ride up to where the battalion vehicles was and see what was happening. He returned and said that the only thing on that road was a which he could find of our battalion was a couple of wrecked vehicles which had been abandoned by the battalion. And while cycling back up the road, had been machine gunned by a German aircraft. So we decided to remain where we were until someone came and told us to get out of it, not knowing that the whole of the front had withdrawn, because Brussels had been, as we learnt later, Brussels had been declared an open city. And I suppose an hour after this chap Clancy had returned, we suddenly had air bursts and machine gunning directed at us from the front. And when we had a low wall around this property, which we had prepared positions behind, and when we looked over the wall, there were literally hundreds of Germans coming along a small road and across the field, and some of the officers on horseback. And we could see the mortar teams and gun in action. They had obviously spotted us moving and considered it worthwhile to knock us out. Well, it was quite obvious that we couldn't do anything about it, and the section commander decided to withdraw. And we withdrew down the Waterloo Road in the direction of Brussels, not knowing that Brussels had been declared open. And having travelled down there, I suppose 4 or 5 miles, there was a gun barrel swung out and covered us. And the leading vehicle pulled up, because there were 3 carriers in the section. And we stood up, and the gun barrel was from an anti-tank gun, British Army anti-tank gun, who was working as a rear guard with the Lancers, who were a light tank battalion. And once they had satisfied, the squadron commander had satisfied himself that we were bona fide English troops, he was rather pleased, because he had lost 3 light tanks, a troop of tanks, in a skirmish, and said, right, you can take their places until such times as you can contact your regiment. And we remained with that Lancer regiment, I suppose, for a week.
Who was in charge of you?
A Corporal Parsons. But and we remained with them for about a week, carrying out what can only be described as rearguard duties, rearguard actions.
Whereabouts was this?
Cool, Nave.
Just somewhere in Belgium.
Somewhere in Belgium, coming back towards Tournai.
And did you see much action in this rear guard?
Yes, yes. Because obviously we didn't carry out the same type of action as the tanks. We dismounted from our vehicles and took up ground position.
Can you describe what the nature of these actions was?
Really, they were delaying actions. When motorcyclists come along the road, you know, German motorcyclists or any infantry were fired, obviously they took cover. And then we had to withdraw them. They were more delaying actions right till we rejoined our own unit again.
How did that come about?
Well, apparently the adjutant of the Lancer Regiment established that the 2nd Warwicks was at a place called Hallein, that was Belgium. and that was spelt HOLLAIN, and it's on the which one is on the canal.
The
Albert, Albert River. I think it was the Albert and the river. I can confirm this later. And they had been, when we arrived back as a section, our adjutant, Captain Toombs, were highly delighted to welcome us because they had just been involved in a rather fearsome, terrific battle in which the battalion had lost a large amount of men, both by way of killed and wounded. Well, officers and men. And the following day, we had to withdraw from Hullein and move back. And strangely enough, the next stop was Romages. And never once did we use the defences that we had dug and built. Going back to the withdrawal, when we were with the Lancer Regiment, just before we got to the Belgian border to recross it, the main road was jam-packed for miles with vehicles three abreast of the British Army withdrawing. Trucks, guns, tanks, light tanks, and in the other vehicle, motorcycles, until we couldn't move. We were at a standstill. And the German Air Force, for the first time, we experienced dive bombing, Stuka dive bombing. They dive bombed us. And also, for the first time, everyone returned fire, rifle fire and brain gun fire, at the Stukas, which had the effect of keeping them up and driving them off so that they didn't score any direct hits onto the column.
So the troops didn't just take cover and not fire?
Oh no, they fired back. I mean, there was, you couldn't take cover really because the ground was flat either side and some of them were stuck in vehicles and by the time they dismounted, the skirmish was over and the planes had withdrew.
So you were saying that you got back to these original positions at
Romages? To Romages. And the whole area had been evacuated, or they had fled, the French refugees. And we never used the pillboxes. And as far as I know, the anti-tank trenches was no use because the Germans just drove across the roads on them, which had been left there, either side of the road, so they wasn't blown. And by a rather, as I realised, after a rather roundabout route, we left Romages the following day and made our way through Armentières and Ypres, Menin, and eventually came to Wormhout, where we didn't know it, but that was to be a last round, last man stand to protect the beaches, which was about 15 miles away. People were then saying, oh, we're going back to Dunkirk. And of course, we'd never heard of Dunkirk. Dunkirk, that's in Scotland. And they promptly forgot about it. And we, battalion headquarters were established in Wormhout in a lightly wooded area surrounding a rather large chateau by the railway station. And during the course of the we arrived there, and during the afternoon of that first day, what the French called tankettes, which was very, very small, two-man armoured vehicles, stopped alongside the, on the road, alongside the area where we were established and camouflaged with our vehicles. And shortly after they left, the German dive bombers arrived, and they dive bombed battalion headquarters and the town of Wormhout, or village, rather severely. And we were fortunate in the area of BHQ that although directives were made into the grounds where we were, there was only about three or four people who suffered slight injuries. One of them, a bloke named Richardson, being blown, they were in a slit trench, and the periphery of the bomb crater just came within the slit trench and blew them up in the air, and he finished up in a tree with, of all things, a broken ankle. And those really were the only casualties from our point of view, but there were a lot of civilian casualties, and there was a lot of heavy damage done to the town of Wormhout, which we didn't see because we were on the outskirts of it, and the rifle companies were further out between Esquebec and Wormhout. And being under strength, the battalion had to spread out. So we was by this, we'd lost a lot of vehicles and men in a carry platoon during the fighting at Hollein. Probably half the platoon and most of the men. And then we'd lost one or two vehicles en route through mechanical breakdowns. But I had my vehicle still, and the corporal, Corporal Cowdrey had a vehicle, and a Corporal Thomas. Now, we were sent with our vehicle to the right flank of B Company, where the Sergeant Major showed us where to put our weapons down by some houses, and we had a huge field in front of us with the road running down on our right. And the instructions we got was, anything comes that way, you shoot at it. We couldn't tell anyone because it was a long way from the right flank of the company, and radios or telephones were non-existent. So we were there, three of us. There's myself, a person named Groves, Jack Groves, who, strange enough, was one of the first national servicemen in the British Army. And another one, an old bloke had been in India about 8 years, was named Spencer, he was with us. And we remained there And we could see some movement farther up the road, but didn't know where they were because no one had given any dispositions of troops out. We didn't know anything. It was just a case of being put down and saying, you stop there till the Germans come, and then when you can't, well, stop there and that's it. There was no sort of saying withdraw or we'll come and tell you where to go to. Anyway, we could see this movement. And I said I would walk across the field, going round the edges, to where these people were. And if they were our people, I would ask them what was going on. And if they were French, then we'd know that we hadn't got a fire on them. Anyway, I walked across, and there was similar to a five-bar gate, but a solid one about head height, you know, all boarded up. And I looked over and I was looking straight at some German SS. And this chap Groves, who was a rather sensible type of bloke, he had told me, he said, well, I will keep you covered with a brain gun. He said, and if I see you run, he said, you run away from that. He said, don't go farther than the gate over there and run away from it, and I'll fire, make that a target to fire at. Of course, as soon as I ran away from it, back the way I've come, and sure enough, he opened up. And then I could hear another brain gun going on the road, because you could tell the difference with the sound of the Brens and the German light machine guns. And when I got back, I said, what's happening? And I said, there's all Germans over there. And he says, I don't know. He said, we'll stop here, I suppose, and fire anybody comes across the field. And then someone came from the road, one of our regiment. I think it was either a lance corporal or a corporal, and said, get from there and go to the road. And there was a culvert running along the side of this road, deep culvert. And in that culvert was a lance corporal Hicks, with a brain gun, and he was the other brain gun I could hear firing, and he was firing straight up the road at the Germans. And the first thing he said, have you got any ammunition? Well, we got plenty. So we unloaded, we'd driven the vehicle just on between the houses, on the cover, away from the culvert. So we unloaded the ammunition off that, both brain gun magazines and a box of 303, and started loading his magazines also. On the opposite side of the road was a cemetery and a block of houses that run alongside the road. And one of my vivid memories of this, the Germans were by then mortaring us and shelling us and firing machine guns down the road. And one of the vivid memories of that was what looked to me an old chap who must have been in his 50s, because remembering I was 18 then, so anyone over 40 was old. He walked out on the doorstep, presumably to see what was happening, and was shot down. And he lay there, which must have been 2 or 3 hours that we were there, groaning and moaning, and you couldn't get to him, because otherwise we would have been dealt with in the same way. And then we saw some of our troops, only a few, about half a dozen, running around the cemetery. They had obviously been chased out from somewhere, which I assume now, in light of later information, that there was some of battalion headquarter personnel, because that was, had been overrun. And this Hicks, Lance Corporal Hicks, shouted to them not to go further forward because there was Germans up there, so they just went back. He then told us, And I was in charge of the vehicle then, and Groves was driving. He said, right, you better take your carrier and go back to Wehrmacht to find out what's happening from battalion headquarters. And we drove down the road, albeit under fire, back to the entrance, really, to Wehrmacht, in which some railway lines ran across from the station, across the road that we were driving down, and ran down the side of the road, because they round a bend, because French used to run the railways down the streets in those days. And when we got to this, where the railway crossed the line, there was a number of our regiment there, including what was then PSM. They called them platoon sergeant majors, Dixon, some of the band who were stretcher bearers from the medical centre, because when the war started, the band became first aid people and stretcher bearer, and two or three other people from what must have been A and B companies. And we were told to take up a position. They had already, there was railway freight wagons across the road as a roadblock, with just a space wide enough for a vehicle to go through. And I was told to place a carrier across that gap to block it entirely. And after we'd been there, the others had taken, all these other people had taken up various firing positions facing to the bend, which was about 10 or 20 yards down the road, and facing up the road from the direction which I had came with the vehicle, and facing towards the railway station, which was up a rue de gare, a small thing. I was then told by this PSM to go up round by the railway station and to the first aid centre to see what was happening. We went to the railway station and then got out of the vehicle and walked towards the first aid centre, which was in this big chateau, and it was surrounded by Germans, and some of our people with their hands up. So we discreetly withdrew, because otherwise we'd have been with them as prisoners, and went back to where the railway trucks were and reported what had happened. And at that moment, I was had taken up a position behind a wheel of one of the freight trucks to fire a rifle from round the wheel. And at that moment, a patrol of German SS come round the corner, 20 yards away. And when they spotted us, they ran back. And the PSM said, right, go through the house, destroy the vehicle and through the houses. So threw a grenade in the vehicle. And I never heard it go off, so I don't know whether the vehicle was destroyed or not. And we ran through entryways of these houses, down a garden, into a field.